Content warning: the following narrative explores mature themes, including ritualistic violence, spiritual darkness, and human sacrifice. Listener discretion is strongly advised. The year was 1993. The air in the mountain lockdown of San Ildefonso was thick with the scent of pine needles, wet earth, and something else. A faint, metallic tang that clung to the evening mist. It was a smell the locals had learned to dread, a silent herald of the unnatural. On a small terraced farm carved into the mountainside, a man named Jericho Abelardo knelt beside a freshly turned plot of soil. He wasn't planting, he was unearthing. Jericho was a man of the mountains, his hands calloused from decades of tilling the unforgiving earth. But his life was changing, the crops were failing, his youngest daughter was gravely ill, and the local doctor, a stern woman from the city, had offered only sympathy and expensive prescriptions. Desperation, the deepest kind, had driven him to a spot his grandfather had warned him never to approach, a small cairn of river stones near an ancient, gnarled belite tree. This tree was one of those places, a geographical marker that seemed to bleed old stories into the land. Under the stones, wrapped in sun-bleached silk, he found it. It was small, no bigger than a child's fist, a smooth, dark stone carved with the image of a squat, winged figure, half angel, half demon. At its base, thin, silvery wires were coiled like miniature serpents. This was an anting, a charm or amulet, but not the kind carried for good fortune. This one was cold to the touch, and even in the weak light of his kerosene lamp, it seemed to absorb the light, drawing a dark circle around itself. The moment his fingers closed around the stone, Jericho felt a jolt, not of electricity, but of recognition, a terrible sense that a great, hungry power had finally woken up. This wasn't just a piece of folklore. It was a relic of the darkest spiritual contracts, a terrifying counterpart to the benevolent talismans that many Filipinos still wear. Most anting-anting are believed to grant luck, protection from bullets, or even invisibility. They are often consecrated by a mambabarang or a spiritist, sometimes tied to specific prayers or rituals, a physical manifestation of faith, much like a Christian relic or a Jewish mezuzah. But a cursed one, an anting-anting like the one Jericho held, required a constant, terrible payment. It demanded blood and loyalty, a spiritual contract that promised untold power and wealth, but only in exchange for a human life, a sacrifice, to remain active. The power was in the debt. The global history of these sacrificial talismans is ancient and chilling. Across Southeast Asia, from the Keris daggers of Indonesia and Malaysia, which are set to thirst for blood, to the headhunting traditions of Borneo and the spiritual appeasement rites of ancient Mesoamerica, the idea of a spiritual object requiring a life force to maintain its potency is a recurring dark motif. The underlying psychological concept is the same: the belief that a material object can contain a transferable, life-giving power, and that life force must come from the most profound source available, another human being. In 1993, in the quiet mountains of the Philippines, that ancient, global shadow was about to fall across a small family. The next day, Jericho's sick daughter, Leila Candelaria, began to recover. Her fever broke and the rasping cough that had plagued her for months vanished as if a switch had been flipped. Jericho's initial, desperate prayer had been answered, but the relic's silence was more terrifying than any thunder. He'd made a deal, and the bill was coming due. Let's pause here. Think about that moment of impossible gain, bought at an unthinkable price. What does it do to the human mind? the relief is crushing because it comes packaged with a secret knowledge, a monstrous task you must perform to keep the gift. If you have your own stories of the strange, the unexplained, or the deeply historical, we want to hear them. Submit your stories to our email, storiesphpodcast@gmail.com, and perhaps your narrative will become our next episode. The folklore surrounding this specific type of ant and Entian is deeply entrenched in the older beliefs of the archipelago. It is often called the Stone of Flesh or the Hantik because its true owner is believed to be a powerful spirit, a kind of dark demigod, often taking the form of a gigantic black ant. This spirit grants the power but lives within the stone, demanding not just a payment but a recurring annual tribute. The power it gives is a kind of inverted alchemy, turning life into fortune. In the 1950s and 1960s, during a period of massive social upheaval and grinding poverty in the rural areas, the lure of this instant wealth was a temptation few could resist, giving rise to many whispered tales of sudden riches followed by sudden, tragic disappearances. Jericho found his fortune almost immediately. A vein of gold-laced quartz, invisible to him for decades, suddenly seemed to glow under a patch of ferns on his land. He became wealthy, but the wealth was poison. The Antinanting had given him everything, and in the months that followed, its influence became a constant, silent presence. His dreams were filled with the image of the winged stone, and in his waking hours, a relentless cold voice, not his own, began to whisper about the coming deadline. The theological perspective on such a cursed relic is simple but profound. It is a rejection of grace. Whether viewed through the lens of Catholic dogma, which dominates the Philippines, or the older indigenous spiritism, the relic represents a binding contract with a malevolent entity, a willing trade of the soul for temporal power. The Antian Ting is not a conduit for divine blessing. It is a spiritual black hole, a mechanism designed to trap and consume. The fact that the most common image carved on these dark charms is often a crude mockery of a sacred image, a distorted crucifix or a grotesque Santo Niño, only reinforces the idea that its power is an inversion of the sacred, a profane parody of faith. Jericho's cousin, Ramon de la Cruz, a devoted church elder and a man who had always been a rock of his community, noticed the change first. Ramon began to see something behind Jericho's eyes, a hollow, frantic look, even as he built a new beautiful house and bought medicine for everyone in the village. Ramon, knowing the old stories, sent a letter to a relative in Manila, a professor named Dr. Altia San Luis, a woman who straddled the world of academia and the paranormal. Dr. San Luis specialized in the intersection of cultural psychology and documented occult phenomena. When she arrived in San Ildefonso in the late 1993, she was not looking for ghosts, but for a pattern, a case of extreme psychological duress manifesting through a cultural lens. The scientific perspective on the Anting-Anting often rests on a complex interplay of the placebo effect.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
And a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy or nocebo effect. The belief in the amulet's power is so absolute that it can literally alter the user's neurochemistry, leading to a surge of confidence that results in material success. Conversely, the accompanying belief in the curse generates overwhelming guilt and fear, driving the user to psychosis or, tragically, to perform the horrific act they believe is required. But Althea found anomalies that challenged the strictly psychological view. She conducted a geomagnetic survey around Jericho's house and noted a sharp, inexplicable spike in electromagnetic fields around a small box he kept locked in his bedroom, the storage place for the relic. Modern paranormal investigation often uses these tools, EMF meters, thermal cameras, and digital recorders, to look for objective evidence of subjective experience. An object should not emit its own field unless it has an internal power source. Afeya's instrument suggested that the stone was, impossibly, an energetic focal point. In a hushed interview, speaking in the new gleaming kitchen Jericho had built, Altid gently pressed him. Jericho finally broke. He didn't speak of the gold or the money. He spoke of the silvery wires on the charm. He said that at night, they would sometimes uncoil in his dreams, vibrating with an urgent, silent message. He said the price was one life by the eve of the new year. The life had to be close to him, a person of the purest heart, someone who would not be missed too quickly, but whose loss would feed the power deeply. Do you want to delve deeper into the secrets and shadows of the Philippines, access exclusive episodes, behind-the-scenes research, and bonus content by joining our community on Patreon? You'll find the link in the show notes. Horrifying brilliance of the curse is its demand for a betrayal of love. The spiritual contract doesn't just want a life. It wants a profound moral fall from grace, securing the user's damnation as much as it secures their fortune. The geographic details of San Ildefonso are vital to understanding this story. The town sits in a basin surrounded by sharp, miscovered peaks. In the ancient Filipino worldview, mountains are often the domains of the diwata, nature's spirits, some benevolent, some malicious. This particular area, with its hot springs and deep caves, was a convergence point, a place where the veil between the physical and spiritual worlds was considered dangerously thin. The Baletia tree where the relic was found was not just a tree, it was a natural cathedral, a perceived gateway, giving the relic's power a local, terrestrial anchor. As the deadline approached, Jericho's paranoia became indistinguishable from possession. He tried to throw the enting-enting into the local river, the Rio Grande, a cold, fast-moving body of water, but it returned, not magically floating back, but appearing on his pillow when he woke up cold and demanding. The curse was loyalty, and it was absolute. You couldn't simply destroy the contract, you had to fulfill it or be consumed by it. In his target, he confessed to Altia in a terrified whisper, was his wife's nephew, Daniel Angelo, a kind, quiet boy who lived with them while attending a local high school. Daniel was innocent, and that, the cold voice in the stone told Jericho, was precisely why his life would be the perfect bitter offering. Altia knew she couldn't call the police. The story was too fantastical and Jericho was too far gone to be reasoned with. She had to break the contract itself. International parallels gave her a clue. In the folklore of the Scottish Highlands, certain cursed objects can only be neutralized by a sacrifice of equal, non-human value, or by giving the object a false, permanent owner. She theorized that if the anting-anting required loyalty, it could be fooled by a profound act of self-sacrifice that offered it everything but the demanded blood. She devised a plan rooted in indigenous ritual and Catholic exorcism, a blend that might appeal to Jericho's damaged psyche. She gathered Ramon and two elderly women from the town who were known to possess the gift of sight. On New Year's Eve, as the sun began to set, they went to the Balete tree. The scene was thick with dread. The geomagnetics around the tree were now so high that Althea's meters were overloading. Jericho stood there, holding the stone, his eyes wide and vacant, a rusted hunting knife glinting in his other hand. "It wants Daniel," he mumbled, his voice a dry, rasping sound. "It says if I do not pay, it will take all of us." Althea stepped forward, her hands empty. "It doesn't want Daniel, Jericho. It wants the breaking of your soul. It wants the ultimate betrayal. That is the payment." She then did the only thing she could think of. She offered it herself. But not as a physical sacrifice. In a powerful guttural chant that mixed Latin liturgical phrases with ancient local spirit calls, she offered the stone a new permanent contract of ownership. She told the spirit in the stone that she would be its master, that she would receive its power, but she would never pay the blood price. She offered it a contract of absolute, eternal, unfulfilled demand. She gave it a vessel it could never escape and whose debt would never be settled. This act, the transfer of ownership into a non-compliant master, was the key. She picked up a sliver of broken mirror, a common component in other Filipino folk remedies, and held it up to the stone. The mirror is believed to confuse spirits, and in that moment, she told the spirit in the anting-anting that the payment it demanded was itself. The effect was instantaneous and violent. The air around the tree became frigid. Jericho screamed, dropping the knife and the stone, clutching his head. The stone, when it hit the earth, did not shatter. Instead, the faint silver wires coiled around it instantly, tightening with a visible, terrifying pressure. The stone's color shifted from deep black to a sickening dead gray, and then with a soft final sigh, the energy field around it collapsed. Jericho was saved, but broken. The psychological and spiritual trauma of nearly committing murder to uphold a dark contract was a wound that would take years to heal. The stone itself was later encased in lead and cement and dropped into the deepest part of the ocean trench, the only place Althea believed it could be contained. The story of the curse Antananting is a stark look at the seductive power of desperation. It shows us that a curse is often not a random punishment, but a contract, a dark reciprocal relationship between a person and a power they cannot control. Jericho wanted a miracle for his daughter and got one, but the price was his humanity. The terrifying thing about these relics is the simplicity of the trade, a single life for a material reward. Don't miss a single story from the shadow history of the Philippines. Follow us on social media for daily folklore facts and updates on our next chilling investigation. I am Paul, and you're listening to Stories Philippines Podcast. When does a spiritual contract become a psychological compulsion? And if a piece of stone can demand a human life, does that mean true evil resides not just in the heart of man, but in the objects we choose to believe in, the terrifying unholy relics that we give power to? Thank you for tuning into this episode. If this story or any of our previous ones have intrigued or unsettled you, please take a moment to like, subscribe, follow, and share this podcast with someone else who walks the line between history and horror. Your support helps us continue to uncover these forgotten tales. If you feel led to support the podcast financially, you can find the various options and links in the show notes. We'll be back next week with another story from the shadows of the archipelago.